Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Convert your current recessed lighting with energy-saving LED downlights from Fight Electric. They're bright and install easily in just minutes. They also go from regular lighting to nightlight mode with just a simple flip of a switch. Save big on all Fight lighting products now at Menards. Shop our lighting options today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey Blenders, it's Sean, and we are not doing a traditional episode this week as the guys take some time off for the Thanksgiving holiday, but I wanted to check in really fast with a bonus episode because Jake and Kevin were able to sit down with Paul Bettany and Alan Ball on behalf of their new film, Uncle Frank. And over the course of the interview, they talk about some things about WandaVision. Alan Ball reflects about the time he won the Oscar for American Beauty, and Paul Bettany gets into some really beautiful stories from his time spent on A Beautiful Mind. So we wanted to make sure that we had this for you guys to enjoy before we headed into the holiday. So, without further ado, here is the Real Blend interview with Paul Bettany and Alan Ball on behalf of Uncle Frank.
So, guys, we're going to actually toss to this interview in the middle of our podcast episode, so I'm just going to jump right into it if you don't mind. But seriously, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Congratulations on the film. Really just a powerful, powerful film. Paul, I'm going to start with you. You know, one of the things I love about road trip movies is that it obviously gives characters the opportunity in a very organic way to get to know each other. I'm curious, when you're working opposite another actor, you know, oftentimes you're meeting them for the first time and you're being thrown into scenes, and sometimes it needs to feel like you've known each other for a while. In what way do you, as an actor, what sort of tricks do you use to try to get to know another co-star as quickly as possible?
Well, usually what you do is you rehearse for a couple of weeks, but we didn't have that. So, I'm not somebody that really believes as an actor much in chemistry. You know, I've had chemistry with a cross on a mat box in, you know, when the actor can't fit in the car. So, you know, what I can tell you is I love actors who are really good. And I was on a road trip movie with two actors who were really good and were as good as I was at faking knowing each other.
You know, there is an art form to the road trip film, and obviously, like, using real cars and making it look as realistic as possible, but with the driving. And I guess this will be for both of you. I'll start with you, Alan, and I'll ask you, Paul, as well. I mean, there are some great road trip films over the years that have just defined cinema and defined genres. I'm just curious, for each of you, do you have favorite ones? I mean, I think Planes, Trains, and Automobiles comes to my mind just from that perspective. But Alan, and do you have a particular favorite road trip film?
Oh, of course. Now I can't think of a single road trip film. Paul, you answer and let me.
Yeah, I'll answer. I really like the Motorcycle Diaries.
Yes. Great movie.
I think it's a really interesting way to look at a really famous figure from history is to sort of, take him earlier as a kid, you know, traveling with a mate and seeing how those experiences on that trip and imagining how they influence his sort of political, Che Guevara's political beliefs later on, I thought was a fascinatingly fresh way of going about it. Also, I think they shot it Super 16 and blew it up, which was also gave it a really interesting feel.
I'm saying you're going to fit in very well to this podcast.
Speaking my language.
Paul. This is a very film nerdy podcast.
Alan, did you find anything? I'm actually rattling some off in my mind too. Is Fear and Loathing considered?
That was the first one that came to my mind. At least the opening act.
Right.
Yeah.
And Easy Rider is a road trip movie, right?
Kind of. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's one. Also, I know that this is not a road trip movie. Five Easy Pieces. There's a little road trip sequence in it.
Oh,
I remember.
That's an extraordinary movie. I just rewatched that recently. It's immaculate, that film.
I'm not gonna lie. I've never seen this film. I need to watch this movie now.
Five Easy Pieces. Five Easy Pieces.
Yeah. I will take your recommendation. Thank you for that. Jay, go ahead.
You know, what's interesting, Paul, what you said, like one of the few silver linings of all of us being stuck at home is the chance to, and I know Kevin's doing it as well, like going back and kind of either watching classic films for the first time or revisiting classic films. I know that that's something that we've both been doing. You know, what's interesting, I think, about this film is, and I mean this, you know, it kind of in a scary way is how timeless it is. Like, obviously, the film takes place in the early 70s. But unfortunately, you really wouldn't have to change that many details of the film for it to take place in 2020, and it would still make sense. I'm curious for both of you, what is that something you ever talked about, or what does that mean to you that it really, you know, aside from the cars and the technology and a few details here and there, you could have set it in 2020 and basically kept the same script?
Yeah, I don't remember. For me, I think one of the reasons that organically it ended up being in 1973 is that, you know, one of the aspects of the movie is that it's a coming of age movie for Beth. And that's when I was coming of age. In 1973, I was a sophomore in high school. I imagine there are people today who are still in the closet, middle-aged gay men who are still in the closet with their family, but I think there are much fewer than there were in 1973. I guess it could, you know, give. I mean, 1973 is so much crazier and weirder and more depressing than 2020 is so much crazier and weirder and more depressing than 1973 ever was in so many ways. So
yeah. Well, we love the storytelling you have here, and you're talking about Sophia's performance. I think is absolutely one of the best performances. she's brilliant in the movie. But there's a great scene earlier on in the film where she walks in and they're reading The Godfather, and she's aware exactly what The Godfather is, and she even talks about a scene in the book specifically as if she's hiding that she's read that from her parents. So I wanted to ask each of you. Were there books and movies that you hid from your families when you were growing up that you would sneak and watch? Like I did it all the time. I wasn't allowed to watch R-rated movies. I would record them on free HBO weekends on those like 8-hour long tapes and just watch them over and over. I'm just curious for each of you. I'll start with you, Paul. Were there films and or books that you kind of had to sneak by your folks?
No, I don't think so. I mean, most of my childhood, there were, you know, three channels, and then VCRs came in, and then I left home. So you're talking to somebody at the boomer end of Gen X. So it didn't really come up much.
Alan, for you,
I remember there were the three channels, and then there was Channel 8, which was sort of like PBS. It was like the educational channel. And I remember they had a thing on Saturday nights at 10. It would be like movies for adults. And I thought, all right, I'm going to get to see some boobs or something. And I was really excited about it. And it was just foreign movies and movies about people who were mentally ill. And it was very depressing.
Wow.
So
that's
no boobs.
That's all we do.
That was like a really dark turn.
I remember the one I watched the whole way through waiting for some people to get naked. And it was just about a guy and a woman who met in a mental institution, and they were both mentally ill.
Wow. Do you remember those like old scrambled channels when you would put on the channel, it'd be all scrambled images and you had to like pay. Like, those were the channels you would sit there and watch and go, maybe it'll clear up one day and you'll see a boob. Jay, go ahead.
Paul, you've been in so many, obviously a wide different range of movies with different feels and different themes, and you know, whether it's, you know, superhero movies or dramatic films like this or adventure films. And I would imagine there are so many moments in this film where I thought, wow, I bet when cut was called, you needed to kind of take a step back and have a moment for yourself and have some downtime. I'm sort of curious how downtime differentiates based on what kind of movie it is. Like, is cut the same for every movie, or does it feel different depending on what kind of movie it is? Do you need the downtime in some movies more than others?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, yeah. I mean, I think the different sorts of movies have different expectations of you. You know, I mean, I didn't have to work out for Uncle Frank. You know what I mean? Which is great. But yes, you know, sometimes Alan would call cut and I would head home and drink a beer and try to forget, where I just have to have my head. I was very glad that I wasn't going home to my children at night, you know, sometimes, you know, because I don't know what use I would have been as a father some of those evenings. But, you know, Alan's a really empathetic director. They're few and far between. And he really looked after me and put his arm around me and, you know, took care of me in those moments.
You know, Paul, I want to talk to you about your process, only in this sense that I focused a lot on the way your character held himself, like specifically like the way he holds a cigarette, the way he might scratch his face when he's in a conversation. And I was just interested to know, like, those little things, how much work goes into that? Like, is that just happening as you're within a scene, or do you plan, like, even earlier in the beginning of the film, you're talking to Sophia, you're holding your cigarette a certain way, you scratch your face. I remember seeing that specifically. I'm like, are those choices, or do those moments just happen as an actor?
I really don't. I mean, I think there's some sort of, I watched the film and I saw a lot of my father in my mannerisms. I can absolutely promise you that it was entirely entirely unintentional. I didn't think about the physicality of Frank at all, except for when he was drunk, and trying to sort of represent that in a realistic way, because it's sort of hard to do when you're sober. But watching it, I do take your point. I saw my father in the way that I smoked cigarettes. I used to smoke cigarettes, and I do not smoke cigarettes in that way. I was sort of shocked. That happened by ghost or something.
Well, I'll tell you that it actually added so much depth to your character, even though it might not have been conscious. It was very interesting how you pulled that off. So, Jake, go ahead.
Thanks, Dad.
Paul, I don't think neither Kevin nor I were gonna bring this up, but it sort of made news today. I'm sure you saw that they finally announced the release date for WandaVision, which is going to be January 15th. Which is very, very exciting.
I just heard that myself. I knew that it was going to be January 15th, but I just heard that they announced it. I had no idea that was going on.
Well, because it's January 15th, that makes 2020 the first year in basically a decade where we haven't gotten any new MCU material. And obviously it's weird for us because we're used to ingesting it on a regular basis. But I'm curious, as someone who is so directly involved with it, has it been weird for you to not have sort of new MCU stuff thrown at you, or do you kind of feel like you're always attached to it in one way or another?
Yeah, no, I 2020 has felt weird in so many ways, and that's just not one of them.
You know, Paul, I'll literally ask you only one more WandaVision question, then I definitely want to get back to this film. But this is something I found interesting when I read an article the other day, that you filmed the first episode in front of a live audience. And I believe you were painted blue as you actually did this. And I wanted to know, just without spoiling story-wise, what it was like to act in front of a live audience. Because I love the style of the show and the way it looks. It's so interesting. That's what grabbed me immediately. But I'm just wondering what that was like to shoot in front of a live audience.
Okay. So it was the best fun ever. And I kind of thought, God, I totally wasted my life. I should have been shooting sitcoms all of this So much fun. It was like being in Summerstock or something, just running around backstage, grabbing props off prop tables and bumping into Catherine Hahn as you're trying to come through the door at the right moment. And we shot it twice. I actually wasn't blue. I was looking like myself. We picked up that there were only a couple of shots where I needed to turn into is that correct? Am I telling the truth? I think I'm telling the truth. Yeah, I think we shot those bits. I lie so often, it's hard to tell when I'm...
Yeah. Kevin Feige just popped out of the corner over there.
Shut up! It was so much fun, and there was a practical reason for it, which is you're trying to have exactly the same production values as you would on one of the big movies, right? So being able to shoot one episode in 2 days and really curtail the amount of time you're spending on those early episodes and shoot them as they would have been shot in the 1950s with three camera setups and three sets that are built on a stage with an audience made that you get through it really quickly, and then you're able to bank that time to shoot the action.
Wow. That's awesome.
So cool. Thank you for sharing that. That's really cool.
Alan, this year marks the 20th anniversary of you winning your Oscar for American Beauty. And, you know, that's just the idea of winning an Oscar is such a foreign concept to me, something I can't even imagine. So I always like to ask this question, just what that moment was like when you hear your name called. Going into that night, did you walk down the carpet were they predicting you to win? Were you thinking you were going to win? And what that walk from your seat to the stage, like those little, like, what is that moment like?
Well, I remember being on the red carpet and I was behind NSYNC and everybody wanted to talk to them. But when I walked by, some reporter said, "Who's that?" And they went, "Oh, he's a writer." And they went, "Oh, okay." They were not. And I remember Charlize Theron was standing in front of me in this orange dress, and she turned around and she went, "Is my gold dust coming off?" And apparently she had gold dust, and I was like, because I was super nervous. I felt like I was really out of my element, and I had a flask of liquor in the pocket of my tuxedo that I hid throughout the evening. And as far as the point when they call your name, I just left my body, and somehow my body walked up on stage. And the first thing I remember standing up there was this monitor in the back of the auditorium going 15, 14
seconds,
13. Yeah. Well, I don't know what I said, but it was, a lot of people, I'm sure for a lot of people who are probably much more well-adjusted and have more self-esteem than I do, that moment would be a moment of triumph. But for me, it was kind of like a nightmarish out of body experience.
Do you remember who presented you with your Oscar?
Yes, it was Mel Gibson.
Wow.
I got to shake Mel Gibson's hand.
That's incredible. It's one of the greatest scripts ever. And, you know, Jake brings up anniversaries. You know, Paul, I'm going to be super personal with you for a second, because A Beautiful Mind is a film that means a lot to me. And next year it turns 20, which is incredible to hear that. It came out in 2001. I'm going to be honest with you. I've been dealing with anxiety and mental health issues all my life. And I actually bring up that film a lot with my therapist, because there's that scene at the end when Russell Crowe walks by you and doesn't give you any attention as you're talking to as trying to get his attention in his mind. And it's always been something I've always told my doctor. I'm like, one day, with mental health aspects, I would love to plow through it and not listen to the voices in my head. And I think about that scene all the time. And I wanted to ask you, just in general, what impact that film had on you? Do you hear people that tell you what that film did for them from a mental health perspective? Because it's just, I mean, it's Ron Howard. It's brilliant. I'm just curious what your memories of that film were. And that scene specifically, like, he just ignores you. And it's like the power that he has in that moment is the best.
Yes, and also, the having to make a decision to turn your back on your best friend, is the also the loss of turning your back on the fantasy, It's written by a dear friend of mine, Akiva Goldsman, and Akiva and I are dear friends, and Akiva writes very well about mental health issues. His mother was a lauded and brilliant therapist who worked predominantly with very, very disturbed children. And, Akiva sort of grew up rocking because that's what every other kid did in the household that he was living in. And I think that he did such a great job at helping visualize a very internal experience. And it was an incredible journey making that movie for a number of reasons, and one of the main ones being I met the love of my life on it. And
you're talking about Russell Crowe, right?
Yes. Yeah, yes. Yes, my two leading ladies, Russell Crowe and Jennifer Connelly. It holds a very special place in my head and my heart, that movie. And I do, I hear you. I think it spoke to a lot of people who have struggled with their mental health, as I think Alan and I can testify to being two people who have struggled with their mental health.
Yes. Well, and that's the interesting thing is, like, I mean, I wasn't dealing with exactly what Russell Crowe's characters deal with. Obviously, I have more of an OCD and depression, anxiety part, but it was the image of him going by you, which is like it's the freedom to make that choice is what I always really kind of latched onto. And I thought that was so brilliant. But we got to let you guys wrap up. But Alan and Paul, this has been a pleasure. The film, we want everyone to see this. It's such an important film for a lot of people. Like I mentioned, Beautiful Mind meant a lot to me. This will mean a lot to everybody else who out there who wants to watch a film that is going to make them think, but also make them understand all the different struggles that we all go through in our lives. And we want to say thank you to both of you and congratulations on this film. And thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you guys.
Thank you. Cool. Thanks guys. And bye, Gigi.
See you, Gigi. Bye, Gigi. Scene-stealing dog. Honestly.
Naturally, we want to thank Amazon for giving us time with Paul Bettany and Alan Ball. Make sure you check out Uncle Frank. Now, we are off this week, but we will definitely be back next week, not only with a full interview, but we're going to have a premium episode for the people who subscribe to that. If you do not subscribe to premium yet, make sure you head down to the notes down below. We have all the details about how you can sign up for even more Real Blend on a weekly basis. We hope that you guys have a very safe and warm holiday season with your friends and family and all your loved ones. And we'll be back very soon with more Real Blend.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.